Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Did you see that Bo Nickel won the Jesse Owens Award as the top male athlete in the Big Ten? He beat out Carson Edwards, Cassius Winston, Dwayne Haskins. He deserved it. Three-time national champion, Hodge Trophy winner, Big Ten Male Athlete of the Year. Look, there are just certain individuals that have the ability to transcend their sport, to get the casual fan interested in what's going on. There have been a lot of great wrestlers out there, right? Jason Nolf is a great wrestler, okay? And in the wrestling world, he is deeply appreciated. Zane Rutherford, great career at Penn State, three-time national champion, appreciated, right? Ed Ruth, three-time national champion, great wrestler, really appreciated in the wrestling world. David Taylor's a two-time champ, but David Taylor and Bo Nickel have an appeal that goes, quote, beyond the wrestling world. That gets, you know, if you want more fans to gravitate to, quote, grow your sport, those are the kind of guys that are going to do it. Bo Nickel's going to do that. Wrestling with, winning with flair. Winning with excitement. Winning with some daring. I remember back in the NCAA wrestling championships, I commented that the semifinals were dull. And, of course, I was roundly criticized for it. And again, that's a case of the in-depth wrestling aficionado not getting in the least what I'm talking about. The wrestling aficionado who loves the sport, loves all the technical elements of the sport, they're going to be there no matter what. That's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is that instead of getting 17,000 fans interested in it, can you get 50,000 fans interested in it? Okay? The casual fan is not going to get interested in it. Oh, you see all the it looks. You know, the casual fan's going to say, well, it looks to me just like going in a circle. And you can explain it all you want, but to them, it's going in a circle. A baseball fan can tell you the difference between a slider or a changeup and a curveball. They're all breaking balls to the casual fan. Okay? I was criticized for saying that. I wasn't criticizing the wrestling. I was saying it was not the kind of action that's going to get the casual fan to say, I'm going to be more of a fan. Bo Nickel does that. Bo Nickel, for 4 years, was the kind of guy that you would stop and say, you know what? I'm going to watch that guy wrestle for 7 minutes. I'm going to stop and watch Bryce Harper hit. I'm going to stop and watch Tom Brady run a 2-minute drill. Okay? I'm going to stop and watch Bo Nickel wrestle. See, that's what he does. That's what he means to the growth of the sport. The fan that loves wrestling is going to be there no matter what. You don't understand the technical part of it. Irrelevant. That's not what I'm talking about. That is totally irrelevant. I'm talking about getting people to sit there and go, hey, I can't wait to watch this. this guy's made me a fan.
Yeah, you got to settle in, because if you go to the kitchen and get a drink, chances are you come back into the room, the score is already 10-2.
The chances are he's already pinned him.
That too.
In fact, the heck with 10-2, chances are he's already done some incredible dynamic move and pinned him.
And it sure didn't take long for him to finish his collegiate career. He's already been working very hard with the Nittany Lion Wrestling Club we'll see him with wrestling trials being at Penn State next year, and things could be really falling into place, not only for David, but also for Bo.
Right, exactly. I'm supposed to be talking to David here for the months out. I'm supposed to talk to David. And David Taylor's a great guy to talk to, and Bo Nickel is a great guy to talk to. First-class guys. And not only that, Nickel's academic all Big Ten. I mean, really, the Jesse Owens Award winner is special on a wide variety of levels. And, Carson Edwards is a great basketball player. Cassius Winston's a great basketball player. Dwayne Haskins obviously had a 50-touchdown year at Ohio State. Yet Bo Nickel did more to make his sport dynamic and interesting to fan bases out there than those three did, even though they had a bigger platform to play in front of in the NCAA tournament or in a Rose Bowl. All three of them had bigger platforms than Bo Nickel, yet Bo Nickel did more to make his sport more interesting and dynamic than they did. See, I'm always talking big picture stuff with this. I think that, and it's unfortunate because I think there's some wrestling fans, I think, that do understand what I'm talking about here. I think there's some that take it so personally that they don't get that I'm trying to say, hey, look, come watch us. I'm trying to get people to come watch us. That's what I'm talking about. Last I checked, that's a pretty positive statement I'm trying to make about the sport, that it's worth watching because of guys like him. And I do get confused sometimes as to why some people get confused by those statements. Okay. Let's get to the recruiting. In fact, we have to get to the play-by-play call of the day. A grand slam for the Oakland A's.
One ball, one strike. Three infielders on the right side for Chris in his A's debut. The 1-1. Swung on. High fly ball, deep right center. Back on it is Kepler, near the wall, with Buxton still carrying, and it's gone! How about that for Chris Herrmann? In his second Oakland at-bat, he clocks a grand slam off of Jake Odorizzi. And just like that, the A's take a 6-3 lead.
There's your play-by-play call of the day. Home runs draw people to the TV set, too. So do grand slams. All right, let's get to the recruiting part. Ryan Snyder joins us from Blue White Illustrated and Rivals.com. Hello, Ryan.
Yes, very much. Where do you come up with these stats? I'm with Frank on that one. That's just you're on a different level sometimes with these stats. It's impressive. I got to give you props.
But I lived it. I mean, Brian Hill was an assistant for 3 years under Bruce. I mean, I knew Brian.
I guess that's a good point.
The difference is the number of people along the way that I've met and I know. So
I can't keep track of this class, let alone some of these things.
I understand that because it's changing by the hour. mass panic set in with decommitments. Now mass euphoria is happening with commitments. Welcome to the recruiting cycle.
Yes.
What have you seen now in the last few days with them? Because there's always going to be a lot of recruiting irons in the fire. But what are you seeing in terms of positional balance with the commitments they're getting and then what they could get?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, as far as positions, I think, coming into the year, wide receiver was a pretty important position. Offensive line was a pretty important position. And, different combinations of players on the defensive line. And we've seen that really play out over the last, couple weeks, I guess you would say. A couple wide receivers here in June and now early July, with Parker Washington committing last night. The offensive line was pretty much more so took place in April.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, the defensive line, we saw Eamon Vanover commit last week, and Brandon Taylor, Kazai Izzard, Fator Mamoba, who I'm really high on, who hasn't really been ranked too high yet, but we'll be talking about him more in the coming months. But yeah, there's a lot of they really have hit their needs. I guess that's the main thing to say. But there's still, you know, a lot out there too. They added a tight end today in Tyler Warren. But you know, if you really look at the scholarship depth chart, and someone like Pat Freiermuth was the leave early, they need more. And not obviously in 2 years now for Pat. let's clarify that. But yeah, so I think another tight end or two is possibly in play, and some more safeties too. That's definitely another key target point, I guess you would say, in the months ahead.
All right, so let's talk about the commitments they received this week, because there has been a flurry of them, Ryan.
Yeah, no doubt about that. I don't even know where to start, really. Well, if you're talking about since Monday, we're at three now. But if you're talking about over the past week or so, we're at, I don't even know, eight, something like that now.
Yeah, they're up to, 19 total commitments? Does that sound correct?
Yeah, 19 total, 13 since the start of June. So let's just go over the past couple guys this week. Parker Washington, wide receiver out of Texas. I think he's the one who has the most hype, I guess you would say, higher ranking, four-star player. Really like Parker. Reminds me a lot of Jahan Dotson, really. Can do a lot of different things. I think he'll be a pretty good player out of the slot. But, you know, it's also like Tompkins in some ways, too, where he can really stretch the field. Joseph Johnson is going to be a cornerback. We have him listed as an athlete on Rivals, but that should get changed to cornerback at some point. 6'3", 180. That's really what stands out there. 6'3", cornerback, can run. I believe he had around a 4.6 at one of the camps this year, which is really good. And when I saw him at the Under Armour camp in Baltimore, he was easy one of the top three cornerbacks there. And that was probably the best camp I attended all year, where, you know, there were a lot of really good wide receivers, a bunch of guys that Penn State's also offered. And he did a great job. You know, I'm not going to say he was perfect on the day. No cornerback is ever perfect. But, you know, he really grabbed not just my attention, but a lot of the other people there. And also Tyler Warren, then. He's listed as a quarterback, actually. This is a unique player that we don't really see much in today's age. Tyler has no social media. He has nothing out there. He does not talk to the media at all. He is completely to himself, which is I respect personally. Mm-hmm. As someone who covers this all the time, you don't see that often. He's actually a quarterback at Atlee, which is right outside of Richmond, but he's going to be a tight end at Penn State. 6'5", 215, athleticism is really just going on a different level. This is someone who Penn State has been really high on for a long time, but fans really weren't, as aware of him because he just doesn't speak with the media much. You know, we've tried to make sure people know that he's in the mix, but, you know, there's only just so much you can do when the player doesn't talk. We don't know how many offers he has. We don't know where he's visiting. We do know he came to Penn State earlier in the year and also camped with them last year. But other than that, there's not too much out there on him. But we know Penn State's been high on him, and we know Penn State's high on a couple other tight ends, too, that may be committing here. At least one of them may be committing here in the week ahead.
It's also a class that has Pennsylvania, Virginia, Texas, Ohio, New Jersey, Maryland, Connecticut, D.C., Indiana, Nevada.
Indiana, yep.
And Nevada. They've had, you have to do certain things. One of them is, in this current era in Pennsylvania, you have to expand your footprint. It's obvious by what they're doing here. They've done everything they can to expand their footprint, which eventually also goes into Florida.
Yep, and that's been the case now for a year or two. And next year, I will say Pennsylvania's moving in the right direction. But at the same time, a few of those players have already clarified either for other schools or just haven't quite emerged yet. We'll see what happens. But it does feel like the depth in PA is getting a little better. 2022, it's also looking pretty good. So that'll be, that'll only help Penn State moving forward. But, you know, they have absolutely cast their nets pretty wide, and that's obviously a good thing. Especially, you know, Texas, Florida is, I don't want to call it the Wild Wild West, but it's a whole different ball game within itself as far as the way 7-on-7 teams work and all that. So they've done a good job getting in there, and of course, like everybody knows, Jaywon Sider's done an excellent job there. But you have to do that in today's age. That's what Ohio State's doing. That's what Michigan's doing. That's what your competition is doing. If you're not casting a wide net, if you're not going all over the cross-country, you're not going to be a top 10 class. And that's what Penn State's goal is every year. And, you know, as of right now, they're on pace to finish right about that.
All right. So give me now a little crystal ball. What are you looking to next that are targets? I mean, there's going to be competition for targets, but targets that maybe you will zero in on and maybe the fans should think about zeroing in on.
Yeah. Well, this week we got two more, I think, to really focus in on. Cole Taylor, tight end out of Colorado. He took an official visit here right before the dead period started, which was, I believe, right around June 20th, 21st, 22nd. Family loved it. Really nice kid, character-wise, you know, academically. He's everything Penn State fans would want. Fits in well with the tight end room. And, you know, is another player who is truly nationally recruited. LSU, Penn State, Colorado, Washington. I mean, talk about all over the country. He has been all over the country. Those seem to be the four schools, and I think LSU is Penn State's top competitor here, although he and his family have done it right, you know, gone into their shell and kept things to themselves. But, you know, we are watching him very closely here over the next, I don't know, 48, 72 hours. Original plan was to try and get it done before July 4th. It might drag out a few more days. But, I think Penn State's pretty much, I don't want to say it's 50-50 between LSU, but it feels that way. We'll see what happens. Then Bryce Mostella, defensive end out of Michigan. Bryce is another guy who came early, didn't really visit much, I guess you'd say, in the middle of his recruitment. It was almost a year, I think, between visits. But then he came back in June, and when he came back, it was pretty clear that Penn State was easily top two or three. You know, right now it looks like Iowa was his top is Penn State's top competitor, but it feels like Iowa. I'm not gonna say they're filled at his position, but they may be. It's really close. I think they have, I think it's six defensive linemen now, which is, you know, pretty big. That would be what Penn State has as well. They may take seven or eight, but my impression is Bryce is going to be a Nittany Lion here. I believe he's committing Friday. I don't have the exact time off the top of my head, but it's looking good for Penn State. So those are the two to really key in on. And then it should slow down, hopefully. My fingers are crossed. Hopefully it'll slow down. You know, as we get up further into the dead period, it kind of cools a bit. You know, this big surge here really is all about the new calendar and the official visits right that you see, especially once school lets out in June. When that happens in June, all these kids want to take visits quick, and for the first 3-4 weeks or so, it is just chaos. Not chaos, but it's very busy. And then, of course, a lot of those players, once they get those visits done, they go home, think about it, and then that's why you see these commitments here at the end of June, early July. So should slow down a little bit once we get to July 10th, 15th range. But then, of course, before you know it, it'll be the lash bash at the end of July, and it'll all probably pick up again.
Right, and then you probably would expect to see a couple of commitments at least come out of that, maybe into August.
Always, yeah. I think Penn State has averaged about two or three commitments every year. Still a little too early to get a list together, although we do know that tight end Theo Johnson is coming back. He's a player out of Canada. He's pretty much been Penn State's top tight end prospect for a while now, which is why it's interesting to watch Cole Taylor here after Tyler Warren committed today, because we were originally thinking two. But, you know, if you look at that scholarship chart and Freiermuth were to leave early, I could see them taking three. It's understandable that they would take three. So that'll all play itself out here in the next couple of weeks and, you know, probably into the early part of preseason practice.
Yeah, because Nick Bauer's a fifth-year guy already.
Exactly.
All right. Holland, of course, has been here, but, you know, he'd be done.
Exactly.
And then, of course, you see what's going on. It's just pure numbers. You got to look at it as to where everybody sits on the class spot as to where they're going with this.
Yeah, and you're always kind of looking 2 years ahead. So.
You have to. What do you see, in fact, in that vein, any movement in terms of people coming in that would be part of the 21 class that would be a part of the Lash Bash?
One class at a time, man.
I know.
Easy on me.
I
right
understand.
Honestly, I haven't done too much work at it. We know Elliot Donald, Aaron Donald's nephew, I believe it is. He's been talking about it. A couple other guys throughout the region, I'm sure, will be in. But we haven't seen too much movement there. Caden Prather's a really good wide receiver that camped at Penn State 2-3 weeks ago. He's talking about coming back. There's going to be a bunch. That's just so far down the road for me right now, Steve.
No, I understand.
I will chip away at that in 10 days from now.
No, I understand that completely, because you're talking to somebody who just concentrates pretty much on who's here.
Yeah.
That's what I do, is to, you know, I concentrate on who's here, because, like, you know, that what you guys do is amazing. There's 50,000 people out there you're trying to keep track of. I just have to keep track of 85 of them.
It's a little complicated sometimes, but I don't want to make it into more than it is. So I'll tell you this: social media is a gift and a curse. It makes it a lot easier for some things, like commitments.
Yeah.
Thank you, James, for We Are Better. That helps me a lot in some ways. But social media is also a total curse, because I'm on it way too much, and, you know, notifications, tracking players. It's a pain in the butt too. But
when,
it's okay.
When you've had a chance to talk to a couple of the recent ones, and you're still in the process of doing that, anything that has been a common thread as to why they pick Penn State? Because they all have their certain reasons, but is there a common thread?
I think the class is pretty close-knit, especially some of the earlier commitments. Cole Brevard is someone we haven't talked about as much, but he seems like a guy that players have kind of gravitated to. Nick Dawkins, Daryl Dawkins' son out of Allentown, he's a guy who, you know, players say, oh, you know, I started getting to know him, really liked him, you know, got to know the coaches more. I mean, it's really all about relationships. And I think fans really understand that coach relationships play a major part. You know, that will always be one of the top, I don't know, two or three things. But players getting to know the other players, too, is also really big. You know, Micah Bowens, for example, the quarterback out of Nevada, you know, he's built a really good relationship with Parker Washington, who just committed the other day. So I think that's one thing that across the board, I guess you'd say, that we've seen from a bunch of guys. But there's so many different things. Obviously, academics are always huge with Penn State.
Sure.
A lot of parents coming up love that. They get hooked on that and pretty much not force their kids to Penn State. But, you know, that's always something they really focus on. But there's always so many things. You can talk about fans and all that stuff. But, you know, I think relationships has been something that I've seen a lot of kids mention, at least in the past couple of weeks.
Obviously, if there's a frustration near people, of course, you know, there's the average decommit across the country in Power Fives, about 4 to 5 a school.
Something like that, yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
okay.
I would agree with that.
Okay, it's about 4 to 5 per school. I realize there is incredible tunnel vision where 4 decommits and all of a sudden everything is caved in. It's happening everywhere else, too. It's just, you know, you have to read beyond just what your own school is doing.
Yeah. I just did the research last week. Miami's at 11 already.
Right.
Which is, you know, a crazy high number. LSU's at 7. Auburn's at 7. Oklahoma, you know, a playoff school that you know, should be able to get just about anyone they want. They have more than Penn State already. So
sure.
just reiterating your point, there are some major big-time programs that Penn State's competing against. Florida, for example, didn't mention them. They have more than Penn State. A lot of big-time schools are already seeing this. And this early, the June official visits, it's just kind of speeding it up. It's giving players that are committed a reason to look around. And it makes it easier for schools to talk those players into visiting.
Because if there's a frustration here, James Franklin is adamant when the players say, I'm going to commit. He is adamant with them about, look, are you rock solid 100%? If you're not, then take other visits. He tells me, if you're not, take other mm-hmm. visits. And I think that's the frustrating part, where he's been assured they're rock solid 100%. And then I think that's the frustrating part.
Yeah. He goes about the best way he can. You know, you can't make a absolute zero no-visit policy. Randy Etzel tried that at Maryland a couple of years ago. It did not work out.
No.
It destroyed their class. We've seen other schools, too, then, that, you know, are just kind of winging it. Hey, you know, go ahead, commit. But we're still going to keep recruiting all these elite players at your position, and that scares kids, too. So there's no real way to handle it. I think James does it the best that he can, you know, tries to make sure, especially to parents, hey, this is our situation. Are you 100% in? You know, if you are, great. We'd love to have you. But if you're even thinking about taking a visit, hold off. And normally, I think a lot of parents understand that. A lot of players understand it. But in today's recruiting world, there's no real answer to that fix. But I think James is trying to handle it the best he can.
And on the fun part of it, how fun was it for you as a former classmate of hers to see Alyssa Nair make the save she made yesterday?
Awesome, man. Awesome. I was really, really happy to see that. My wife, She played collegiate soccer. We've, you know, I'm a big soccer guy. So, Alyssa, you know, I met her once back in the day. She's a really nice girl. I'm not going to act like I was friends with her or anything, but just met her briefly. Very nice girl to see her shine on the big stage, man. He can't ask for anything more than that as far as, you know, what she's worked for and all that kind of stuff. So hopefully she can get it done on Sunday.
Hopefully. Let's see. You know, one more time, you win the World Cup. Ryan, thanks so much. Appreciate all the time.
No problem, Steve. I'm sure we'll be talking about it last round.
I'm sure we will. Thanks so much, Ryan.
Take care, guys.
Have a great fourth, by the way.
We will. Hopefully a little pool, a little relaxing. It's needed right now.
Absolutely. I can understand that completely.
See you guys.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to have you with us on the show today, brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. U.S. Women's World Cup team awaiting the winner of Sweden and the Netherlands. And they'll play Sunday at 11. They're going to have a watch party here. And it's going to be at Panzer Stadium, the lacrosse stadium. That has the best single video board I've ever seen. Phenomenal. To the point when you're driving a University Drive, it is distracting. By the way, Sweden and the Netherlands in a scintillating scoreless tie at the 81-minute mark. Oh. No discipline for Zeke Elliott. He met with Commissioner Roger Goodell. So no discipline for him.
Well, speaking of no discipline, the news out of Atlantic City this morning, it turns out Odubel Herrera's girlfriend declined to press charges with the, what did happen, what did not happen. Yeah, we'll probably never know. Memorial Day down in Atlantic City at the casino. So,
right.
Of course, that led to investigators not having enough info to dig up to press charges on the Phillies outfielder. So.
Yeah. So that's a slice of good news for him.
Like it never happened.
Right. Joey Galino from Yahoo Sports going to join us on Friday to talk about the Women's World Cup. Now, Sweden and the Netherlands may still be playing then, but...
Of course, a loser of that game that will take on England. I think Saturday would be the third-place consolation game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a great one to be a part of.
Lock it in.
Yeah. We're going to play for third place. Can I go home? brutal. That's... Wow. Why?
That'd be like an extra college football game after the national semifinals 2 days before the Monday night national championship game. Let's play for third place.
The NFL used to have a game in the 60s.
Oh, yeah.
Called the Playoff Bowl.
Yeah.
In fact, the Steelers participated in the Playoff Bowl, and so did the Eagles, as a matter of fact. And back then, of course, there was just an NFL championship game. So there weren't extensive playoffs, unless there was a tie one year. Remember the Colts and the Packers had a playoff game. But there was... It was called the Playoff Bowl. Now, the reason they played it was to benefit, I believe, the pension plan. And it was a game that nobody wanted to play. Now, starting in 66, of course, you ended up having the Super Bowl. And the merger mercifully ended the Playoff Bowl. And Vince Lombardi had to take the Packers to the Playoff Bowl in 63 and 64. And he called it the Blank Bowl. The word he used began with an S. A loser's bowl for losers. in the 64 game, they played the St. Louis Cardinals, and the Cardinals won. And Lombardi said, quote, a hinky-dink football game held in a hinky-dink town, played by hinky-dink players. That's all second place is, hinky-dink. I think that sums it up. Ironically, Lombardi's last win as a Green Bay Packers head coach, because then he coached the Redskins for a year, 2 years after that, happened to be in the hinky-dink Miami Orange Bowl when they played the playoff bowl. Didn't feel it that day, did it? But let's see. Your Steelers participated in it in 62. Lost. Yep. The king of the playoff bowl, the Detroit Lions, 3-0. The Colts were 2-0. The Rams were 2-0. The Cowboys were 1-2. The Cleveland Browns, 0-3. Nothing's changed. Packers were 1-1. The Eagles were 0-2. The Cardinals were 1-0. The Vikings 0-1. The Steelers 0-1. The playoff bowl. Yeah, the playoff bowl. The Detroit Lions, by the way, won the first three playoff bowls. I remember watching one, maybe two. I think I watched two. I remember the Colts and Eagles game. I remember watching that game. Now, don't ask me why. I love football, so I watched it. And I can remember a game between the Cowboys and Vikings in the playoff bowl. So I actually did watch. CBS did all of them, by the way. It was just an additional football game. You just kind of wondered where, you know, I don't know. I was a kid, so it was another game, so I didn't really think about it being a... I knew it wasn't a championship game. But it's the playoff bowl. And the word hinky-dink's been used on this show more today than it has in the entire history of the show. Courtesy of Vincent T. Lombardi. All right. So no discipline for Elliott. U.S. awaits the winner of Netherlands and Sweden, which is now scoreless 89 minutes in. Brutal. How's it going? Nobody scored. Okay.
That's why the suit gets on my case when I start to talk about Premier League. Yeah, it's just not enough goals. Not enough action. We want wall-to-wall points.
Okay, he loves a sport where people go in circles.
This is true.
But they do it fast.
Right. And they're not racking up points per lap. So,
well, you know what, the points thing, let's see, the points thing, NASCAR points, IndyCar points, FedEx Cup points in golf. We're trying to get the season long race to the FedEx Cup. NASCAR gets his, you know, race to the playoff. I mean, I know they're trying to create some sort of season-long excitement, but I'm sorry, it doesn't work.
Although I guess now when they have this stage system set up, whoever's leading, I guess like gets.
I think the stage system, as an outsider looking in, I think the stage system is stupid. Okay. You're in the middle of the race. I want a stage. No, get in the car and go 500 miles. At the end, who goes across the line first? To me, that's a race.
I know during the Fox coverage this spring, I would like pop the race on and I would see X number of laps to go. And I was thinking, wow, it's early. That must be the end of the race. Oh, no, wait, that's how many laps remaining in this stage. Oh, okay, right. Now I get
just race. So. I mean, I dearly appreciate, I really do, getting in a conference room and brainstorming ideas. How can we make this more interesting? How can we get more people to watch? How can we get people excited? So I do not blame them for trying out something new. I don't blame them for trying something new. But you also have to be smart enough to sit back and say, this isn't really working. And I know, I watch the Indy 500. That's not done in stages. In fact, IndyCar doesn't do stages. And NASCAR, I'll watch the Daytona 500. I'll watch the World 600. Maybe the Brickyard 400. Maybe. Are they racing tomorrow? They used to have the Firecracker 400 on the 4th of July.
I don't think it's till... I thought it was Saturday night. I thought it was prime
Saturday
time.
Night.
Yeah, and it's now NBC.
Yeah,
NBC takes over
that's fine.
Rest of the year.
Yeah. But... I want to watch the. If I'm going to watch the race, I want to watch the race. All the ups and downs of what it's like to get out in a car for 3 hours, and when it's all done, who went 500, 400, 600 miles the fastest? The stage thing. I'm like, I know you're trying to make it three races into one, and I understand the thought process of it, and I don't blame them for trying it. But you do have to give up the ghost at some point and say, you know what, let's just go back to what worked before. I mean, that's like assigning, I won the inning. Okay, we won the first three innings, you won the next three innings. No, I won the first quarter, you won the second quarter. No, it's not how it works.
Yep, Saturday night, 7:30 from Daytona.
That's fine. That's fine. That's especially on a holiday weekend like this. That's great.
And they go to Kentucky. That's also Saturday night, the 13th. Then up to New Hampshire for the 21st, and then back to Pocono for Sunday, the 28th.
Good. Okay.
There you go.
I know they love racing at Pocono.
And then Watkins Glen early August.
Yeah, and that's another part, too, is that... NASCAR does a much better job of staying away from road racing. In other words, they mix it in. Okay, it's going to be Watkins Glen. All right. So that only happens. Is that the only time they do that during the year?
I thought they had
one other.
Yeah, late
maybe
June they go out
other.
To Sonoma. Yeah.
But that's it. That's all they do. Yeah. And I like that. In other words, we change up the schedule once or twice. IndyCar changes it up all the time. There are too many road races. People want to see, in this country, I'm talking about this country, they want to see speed. Okay? They want to, put the pedal to the floor. Can you pass him or her? Okay? That's what they like. IndyCar does too much road racing. NASCAR has the right mix. It's like in golf. You have one match play championship. Well, that's about all really people want to see. Unless it gets down to like the Ryder Cup or the President's Cup. That's different. But you get one every year. They used to have, they don't have it anymore, but they used to have one tournament with the Stapleford system of scoring where you got points for birdies and eagles and got deducted for bogeys. They did that once a year. I think they did that out in Colorado every year. They did that for a while. Finally, the tournament got dropped. But they did it once in a while to change it up. See, IndyCar changes it up too much. Too many road races. And when we had the suit on last Friday, we talked about that. Too many road races. And he agreed. All right, we'll take a break. Wrap it up in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle's worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Great to have you with us on the show today. I want you to have a very safe, beautiful, wonderful, happy 4th. There's going to be a lot of fireworks displays out there, including, of course, a big one here in State College, 4th Fest, that will take place tomorrow. We'll see about how the weather turns out. I mean, it's a little there could be a few thunderstorms out there. We'll see. I'm not gonna worry too much about it. I'm going to enjoy it like the rest of you, and then we'll be back on Friday, and Joey Colina is going to join us from Yahoo Sports to talk about the World Cup, and the King is also going to be here.
That he will. Got confirmation on that last night.
I'll tell you right. I mean, really, have a fun, happy, safe 4th of July. Barbecue, family, friends, fireworks. And then we'll be back on Friday. Some people are taking four-day weekends. We're going to have a show. So we'll get back to work on Friday and talk about World Cup soccer. Have some fun as well. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Your station for news, weather, business, and CBS Sports Radio. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury and on WKOK.com.